inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
If you are brand new to rental property investing and you're trying to figure out how to get started, I've put together an ebook that shows you the five-step process to buy your first rental property. If you want to download it right now, just go to landlordgift.com. My guest on the podcast today has a really inspiring story. A couple of years ago, he was working his full-time job and he wanted to start buying rental properties. So he picked up his first property and his second property and his third property. And next thing you knew, he had actually put together a pretty big portfolio. So I want to hear his story today and figure out how he was able to do this all while working full-time. So let's take a real quick break to thank our sponsors. We'll come right back in 60 seconds and we'll meet Ian Reeves from Kansas City. Whether you want to buy your first rental or you're an experienced investor, you probably already know that having someone on your team to help you finance a property is one of the most important things that you can do as an investor. Chailey Ridge has helped thousands of investors generate rental income by getting the right financing in place for their unique situation. She's an experienced investor herself, as well as an expert on financing rentals. See what she can do for you. Find out more today at RidgeLendingGroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, LendingGroup.com.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Hey, Ian, welcome to the podcast. So you've been investing for just about 3 years. Tell us what you've accomplished, because I think it's really incredible what you've done in the last 3 years.
Yeah, hey, Dan. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Sure.
So just to give you kind of a quick overview of my investing. So I started out, as a lot of people do, with reading the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So this is about 3 years ago. I got really into the personal development stuff and the reading. And one thing led to another. You know, you read one book and you always get three more to read. Mm-hmm. And eventually read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And after reading that book, yeah, I kind of decided, well, that's, you know, I felt like there was something that I wanted to focus my energy towards, and that just felt like the right thing to do. So I immediately got really into real estate investing and started doing a lot of research and reading a lot of books on it. And I spent about 4 months just getting myself really educated as much as I could, networking, going to RIA events and things like that. And then I bought my first deal. So the first deal was a live-in duplex, so a house hack. And it was kind of a house hack slash burr because it was actually a value-add duplex. So I had to do some rehab on the side that I was living in. So that's how I got started. That was my first deal. Worked out great. That's actually, to this day, one of my better performing properties.
Now, from a house hack to, like, how many units do you have today, or how many doors do you have today?
Yeah, just over 100. Yeah.
So to go from one duplex to over 100 doors in over 3 years is just mind-boggling to me. Like, was it scary at all, like, to grow that quickly?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. So, like, what did you just keep, like, you kind of figured out what worked and you just kept on doing it?
Yeah. I mean, I just sort of had this, you know, I read and listened to all these stories about people that created financial freedom through real estate. And I have and always have been a very impatient person.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get there as quickly as I possibly could. So,
I mean, 3 years.
Yeah, I used a variety of strategies to get there.
I mean, it's just mind-boggling because, like, most of the people we've had on the show that have had big portfolios like that, it's taken them over 10 years to get there. And to do it in 3 years is really pretty incredible. Was it, like, looking back on it, was it easy or was it a big struggle to get to where you are today?
Oh, you know, it's kind of like the entrepreneurial roller coaster, I guess. So you've got times where things are great and, you know, it's easy and you're positive, and then you have times where a bunch of stuff goes wrong and you're negative and down on yourself and asking yourself, why am I doing this? So lots of ups and downs. I would definitely say, you know, the faster you grow things, the more stress there is going to be. So there's definitely been some sacrifice to make things happen at that pace.
Now, you've recently gone part-time at your job. Now, I got to imagine that this is something you probably could have done earlier. Am I right? Like that you probably had enough cash flow after maybe 20 or 30 units that you could have done this sooner?
You know, I'd convinced myself earlier that I probably could have, but you know, it takes a while to get things stabilized too. So from the time that you first buy a property, and you know, my primary strategy is the BRRRR strategy. So it's buy distressed, fix up, and then rent out, and then refinance. So that whole process takes quite a bit of time. And we also bought several properties that were in an unperforming condition. So, you know, the process of actually getting them turned and getting them to where they're actually making lots of positive cash flow, that's a lengthy process. And even now, our portfolio is, we still have quite a few properties that are either not performing or underperforming, and we're still, you know, I have this number on the spreadsheet that says where we should be when we're all done, but, you know, there's a lot of, it takes time to get there, and we're not quite there yet.
Let's talk about some of those deals that maybe didn't go well, because I think a lot of times that I think we can learn from deals that didn't go well, sometimes better than the ones that went perfectly. So there was one you were telling me before that was an 8-unit building that you bought. Tell me about that property.
Yeah. So, you know, we had this great plan that we laid out on that property to, you know, when we started out, the rents were anywhere from 300 to, I think 425. They were very low. And the plan was that we would take, there was, I think, 2 units that were vacant, if I remember correctly, when we purchased it. So the plan was to get those units rehabbed, you know, try to rent them out to a little bit better tenant class, and then slowly, you know, go through the rest of the units one at a time and rehab them and continue to bring in the new tenants at the same time that you're kicking out the old tenants and get the whole property performing. So that was plan A. So we got the first couple of units rehabbed, and then we started marketing them towards new tenants. And what we quickly found out was that the you know, $350 tenants that were in the building were scaring off the potential new tenants.
I could see that. What was the price range for the new tenants? Like, what were you trying to raise their rent up to?
$600 to $700, depending.
Okay, on, you know, so it's double, basically.
So plan B was, you know, and the other thing is we didn't make that decision quickly enough either. So we were going down that path for a long time, and we wasted several months of, you know, why isn't this getting rented? What do we need to do? Blah, blah. So it took us a long time to finally make the decision, okay, we just got to bite the bullet, kick everybody out, and then start over. And that was ultimately the right thing to do. But, you know, a lot of times when, you know, hard decisions don't get easier with time. You know, in hindsight, it was obviously the right decision to make, and we should have made that in the beginning, but then, you know, so we didn't. So, you know, that added several months to the schedule and, you know, added to our holding costs and all that. So
now, what about getting financing? You know, because you are fairly new at this. I mean, you don't, I mean, 3 years is a long time, but at the same time, it's not. So when you're going to a bank and you're telling them, look, we've acquired all these units in this short period of time, has it been difficult at all to get financing?
I would say in recent months, yes. So I think we've kind of started to hit a little bit of a limit there. So that was, so I mentioned to you that I'd kind of changed strategies a little bit towards flipping. So that was I know your podcast is about buy and hold, but you know, that was actually part of the reason for it as well, is, you know, banks kind of want to see things get stabilized a little bit.
So basically your strategy is you work at your job, and then the money that you make from your job, is that just the money that you live on?
I actually even now still live on less than what I make at my normal job. So
and then you're flipping houses, and that's generating big sums of money that you can use to invest with. Like, so you're using that for rehabs or down payments or whatever to get into properties.
Yep. For example, we purchased a package of five properties on owner finance, and they were all underperforming properties. So the average rent was, I think, $650 or something like that, and the potential rent out of those properties was $875, $895 up there. But every property requires, you know, $15,000 worth of rehab to get there. So you know, the plan there was to, same thing, is, you know, kick them out, you know, one at a time over a period of time, and then basically use money from flip proceeds to go in and rehab and get them performing. So,
Now, what about the cash flow that the rentals generate? Are you spending that at all, or does that just go right back into the business to keep growing?
I have been, in the 3 years that I've been doing this, I have yet to take any money from the business.
Okay.
If anything, I'm actually continue to invest my own money from my normal job into
it. So I think that's interesting. So when do you see that shifting, that like you'll be able to maybe cut back your hours more at work, or maybe eventually not work at all, and have the properties actually generating cash flow that you can live on? Like, is that your goal, or is that something you would want to do eventually?
When I went from being full-time to 3 days a week, so the 3 days a week is really pretty nice.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, a big part of the reason that I had to cut back is it just, with the amount of, you know, the volume of work that we were doing, it became unsustainable. Mm-hmm. I was working nights and every single weekend, and, you know, it made it really hard to have a life outside of work.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So with 3 days a week, you know, I can manage it quite a bit better, and, you know, I can take one day off a week and actually enjoy myself, which is pretty nice. So it's honestly pretty sustainable. So I'll probably continue to do that for, you know, the foreseeable future. But as far as cash flow, we're getting close. I mean, we've been, so we've got a couple big properties right now that we bought a 15 unit, a building that was, it was a full gut rehab, all 15 units.
Wow.
And I think it was about a month ago, we finally started releasing some of the units. So we've turned five units over to the property manager, and we have another five coming up here within the next few weeks. So that property is going to go from losing $4,000 a month to, you know, making $5,000 a month. So that'll be a pretty big,
you know, that's what I was thinking, is that, like, you're not making excess cash flow right now, but you're still growing. Like, these properties are still kind of coming online. So I think in the future, you probably will have, your cash flow is probably going to be a lot higher than it is today.
Yeah.
Right?
I mentioned to you, so we've actually stopped growing the portfolio right now. So we're not doing any more buy and holds. So we're just flipping and then basically reinvesting that money to, you know, and getting the entire portfolio performing.
Okay.
So it was basically 3 years of exponential growth.
Yeah. I mean, so I think that's great. I mean, it's like, so now, I mean, you've reached this huge milestone of 100 properties or 100 doors. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, you can work on turning them around and making them profitable. I think that's, that's really pretty awesome. Now, is it a lot of work? Like, on those 2 days, are you busy a lot of the time checking on the rehabs or dealing with tenant issues?
I mean, the tenant issues are, so I did mention we're 100% managed, so I don't manage any of the properties, or we don't manage any of the properties. So that definitely takes you know, a lot of the load off, but yeah, not all of it.
Yeah.
So I kind of, that was one thing that I kind of learned early on, is having a property manager does not mean that you don't have to manage your properties.
Right. Sure.
So,
how does that work? So if something small happens, will they just deal with it and not even call you, or are they involving you with every decision they're making?
Yeah. So we have a maintenance limit, and that's up to every owner. So they can, I think that's probably common with a lot of property managers, is you can set what that maintenance limit is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe it's $200 for one landlord, and maybe it's $1,000 for another. It just depends on how involved you want to be. But, you know, so if it's $500, that means that they have the authority to go in, and if it's, you know, minor stuff, they can go in there and do that without having to contact you. But if it's something big, like, you know, needs a new roof or, you know, water heater or furnace, things like that, then that way they at least notify you about it. And, you know, if you have your own crew that can do it cheaper and you want to do that, then that becomes an option for you.
You know, I was just thinking that as you were saying that, I mean, you probably can do it cheaper than they can, because you've already got the rehab crews working on your property. So is that how you have it set up, that if something big happens, you send your crew over to do it?
Yeah. Okay. So if it's a unit turn, so, you know, so we bought quite a few properties that had existing tenants. So we knew when that tenant moves out, you're going to have to go in there and do a fairly significant rehab. So we just, the PM basically just turns it over to us, and we do the majority of the work and then turn it back over to them. So
awesome. Yep. Now, part of the way that you've been able to grow so quick is that you haven't done it 100% by yourself. You've used a couple of different partnerships.
Yep.
And the partnerships have mostly been, it sounds positive, but you've had one that recently went bad.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about what happened?
Yeah. So I'm not going to go into too much detail here.
Okay.
Just because it's still in progress. But so I had a guy that I met through one of the realtor groups here in Kansas City, and I partnered with him on a couple of flips, and turned out to be a little bit of a scam artist.
Wow.
So
how did you find out? Like, so he was stealing money from you or from the business?
Yeah. So I guess I'm a pretty trusting guy by nature, and I think in general, that served me pretty well. So, I mean, it's helped me with building relationships and networking and things like that. But I feel like people kind of fall to one of two extremes.
Yeah.
They're either too trusting, or they're, you know, a lot of people are just so jaded that they, you know, can't have a good working relationship with a person. But long story short, I was very, very trusting, and the guy seemed like a pretty stand-up guy, and you know, he was charming and all of those, you know, he seemed intelligent and had been investing for quite a while. So, you know, of course I trusted him.
Yeah. Can you tell us how he was stealing, or how you found out?
Yeah. So we basically partnered on this house. It was a very large rehab. So, you know, it was a down to the studs type of a rehab. And the rehab budget on that house was about $50,000. And the agreement was that he would act as basically a GC. So he would GC the job, I would provide the funding for the job, and then we'd split the profits. So I basically found out that, you know, one of the companies in quotes that he was hiring, I got some invoices that looked a little bit suspicious.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I called the number on the invoice because it looked suspicious and nobody answered. And long story short, I started doing a little bit of research.
So they were just fake invoices.
For any real estate investor, a really good thing to be able to, you know, understand what to do is, you know, how do you do a business search? So I did a Missouri business search of this business entity, and it, sure enough, it was a legitimate entity. However, it was, that entity was a fictitious name owned
oh, wow.
by the guy I was partnered with. So he basically set up a a fake company and was hiring other subs and then skimming money off the top. So
have you figured out how much he stole from you? Or are you still going through that?
By my best estimation, it was about $30,000.
Wow. So does that scare you off from partnerships? Because, I mean, some partnerships can be great, and it sounds like your other two partnerships have mm-hmm. been great. But does that scare you off from doing another partnership in the future?
You know, not really. I think I blame myself for not doing enough due diligence on him. So,
yeah.
You know, I was a little bit maybe naive before, but I'm actually glad that I learned the lesson because, you know, I know what to look for now. And
so what would you look for? So if someone's looking at doing a partnership, like, what would you tell them to look for?
So you need to look for references. So the real estate investing community is a pretty small community, honestly.
Yep.
So, you know, you start asking around people that you know and people that you trust and say, hey, have you heard of this guy? What do you think about him?
Mm. Yeah,
you'll find out pretty quick.
Yeah,
honestly.
Sure.
It's a pretty small world, and you know, so honestly, that whole experience, it was pretty rough on me.
Yeah,
I had never been deceived like that before.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I started doing a lot of research. Like, well, why did you know? I did not suspect anything, honestly, and I learned that it's about, I think it's 3-5% of the population have sociopathic tendencies.
Wow.
And they tend to gravitate towards, you know, fields where they can take advantage of people. So real estate investing, contracting, things like that. So kind of started to make a little bit of sense. So
it's
definitely got to look out for those personality types. They are out there. They do exist, which, you know, I was a little naive to before, but. Yeah, I would definitely just say, you know, do your research on somebody.
I mean,
and then go with your gut.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you really got to do your due diligence. You know, whether it's a tenant or a business partner, you got to make sure you know who you're dealing with. Because if someone has done someone wrong in the past, they're probably going to do it again. So you know, it's
You know, as I did more research on this individual, I found out that he had a very long track record and history of doing this sort of thing. So the chances of, you know, if you get into business with somebody and it being the first time is very small.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those personality types are just about always repeat offenders.
So what about as far as getting out of business with him? Is that turning out to be pretty challenging to kind of wrap things up with him, or?
That is actually still in process, which is why I don't want to.
Yeah, you know, okay, I gotcha. Well, we'll have to have you come back on at some point when this is all over and see if we can get some more details. But Ian, thank you so much for coming on. I think that this was a really informative episode. If someone wants to learn more about you or look you up online, where's the best place for someone to find you?
Honestly, social media. So I'm, you know, I post a lot of stuff on Facebook and Instagram that are, you know, real estate related. So find me on there.
Awesome. Yep. I've got links to Ian's social media. You can find it on the website. Just go to rentalincomepodcast.com/episode177. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing to the show. We've got a new episode for you next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.